from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Jeff Deasy, Sherry Griffith, Dan Johnson, Laura Fine, Chris Veronis. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you'd like to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And again, if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, audio and video, go to beyondthebeltway.com. You can watch it live every week. And also, if you miss it, you can watch it there for years to come. There are 36 days to go before the Republican convention in Cleveland, 148 days to go before Election Day. But the big numbers in America tonight are 50. 50 Americans dead, 53 wounded as a result of a terrorist attack in Orlando, Florida. And it was revealed by the shooter that when he called 911 before he started his shooting rampage, that he was doing this and pledging his allegiance to ISIS. ISIS later in the day acknowledged and took credit for what happened in Orlando, Florida. Tonight's program, I don't think, is going to be the typical left-right discussion that we generally have on this program. At least I hope not, and I mean from those listening as well, because there's bigger, broader issues. Maybe there's some things that really we can come to agree on this evening in the next couple of hours. And also a little bit later on in the broadcast, we're going to be talking with an expert who is working with the government, coming up ways to fine-tune and to improve the way we combat ISIS on the Internet. Chris Veronis, you're one of our Republicans tonight, but let me ask you this question. Is there anything that you think we can do to reduce the incidents like last night in Orlando, Florida?
I don't know is the short answer. I don't know what we can do. If you look back at the San Bernardino shooting, California is one of eight states that had an assault weapons ban, and yet assault weapons were used. You had an incident, I mean, the details are coming in right now, but with the shooter in Orlando, this is a guy who was investigated, interviewed by the FBI two or three times, and a security guard, and yet he was able to find guns. You also have this lone wolf phenomenon, which is, if you think about it, really scary.
Dan Johnson, one of our Democrats tonight. Dan, what's your answer to the same question?
Well, the obvious answer is stronger gun control legislation is a glaring deficiency in our national security apparatus. It's ridiculous that it happened in this country 50 times more than in other countries because we make it so easy for anybody to buy a gun for any reason. But the other thing we need to talk about is it was an attack on the gay community, and the intolerance for people, the hatred of people for who they are, whether they're gay or whatever they are, that's something that is dangerous. And anybody, whether they're Christian or Muslim or whoever they are, anybody that says they are gay people are bad or wrong or full of sin, turns out that's really problematic.
Sherry Griffith also joins us. Sherry, you're a vice chairman of the Chicago Republican Party. What is your take on the question I asked? What can be done, if anything?
I don't believe it's more gun control legislation. I don't believe that that's going to be the resolution to this, simply because too many weapons are being gotten illegally. So I think we've seen, you know, the numbers and the reports that show that the folks that have the weapons may or may not be the ones who have gone in and legally gotten them, or, you know, there's
although in this case that they were gotten illegally rather. Also, State Representative Laura Fine joins us. You're a Democrat. What's your answer?
Well, I agree with Dan in the fact that we need more national, stronger gun control laws. But I think an important...
If people want to do harm to the United States, do you think they're going to be worried about the law? Won't they get a gun?
You know, that could be the case, but In this case, it was purchased legally. In many cases, we see guns that are gotten illegally, and that's something we have to watch out for, too. And I think something else that we have to talk about as well and has to be part of the conversation is mental health awareness in this country. And this is a point where we're seeing many states cut back on mental health funding, and many people have had that cry for help before.
But, in this particular case, again, I mean, the mental health, the gun control, those have been common denominator cases or issues in recent shootings, or certainly over the last several years.
The daily shooting.
But in this particular case, this was a devout follower of Islam, radical Islam, or Islam, who believed because he saw two gay men kissing in Miami, and that's what his father acknowledged.
We really don't know. I mean, the details are still coming in.
But that's what his father said. But again, if you look at Islam, that's the way radical Islam views gay people. They kill them.
They push
the walls over on them. So the fact that you can be gay in America and you can practice being gay in America, the fact that you can do that, that's what they hate.
Let me give you something that, you know, maybe Trump would like to hear. But maybe we need to be tougher on any ideology or any religion that persecutes minorities like gays. And to the sort of the Trump worldview, radical Islam, right? He's got a point when it comes to it's not okay that you say
also,
gay people should be killed or stoned.
It's also not the only one.
That's true. Hey, look, there are a lot of radical Christians that say the same thing, right? And some Texas Republican politician tweeted some Bible verse like "Reap what you sow," right? Mm-hmm. But the anti-gay stuff is not okay, and it's not okay when it comes from Muslims. And it's not okay when it comes from Christians or whoever else does it. But I think you're right. I think it's fair now that Democrats, too, we should be calling out anybody that interprets Islam or interprets Christianity to say, you know, the proper response to somebody who's gay is to stone or kill them.
Do you feel that Bible verse was incorrect in that situation? I mean, you know, do you know the standpoint from which he said it? I mean, if you take a look at biblical verses and the history of what's being said there, none of the stuff that we're experiencing right now is not new. There's nothing new about this. So, you know, I think one thing we have to realize is that we've got radical Muslims and we have Muslims who are not radical. Mm-hmm. And we cannot legislate behavior. So why continue to pile on more and more laws?
How do you segregate one from the other, though?
Where's the need to segregate them? I think it's going to start at the borders. It has to start at the borders. Who are we letting in? Who's already here?
Sherry,
what's the behavior?
Sherry, this was a United States citizen. He was born in the United States. He got a job as a security guard. He got his weapons legally. He did all the things right. But you know what? There was something about him. There was something about his religion. He was devout, and he was triggered. What triggered him was seeing two gay men kiss. That is according to his father. And this was the reaction. So here's someone who can't understand that life in America allows the pursuit of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
I don't think that had...
And last night, there were 103 people that we know about that were pursuing happiness in Orlando, Florida, and they were slaughtered by a guy who had a twisted belief on what he thought the Quran or Islam was telling him he could do and get away with it. And that was his thought. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, we'll have your comments at 1-800-723-8289.
I'm Hugh Hefner, editor-publisher of Playboy magazine, and your host. And this is Playboy's Penthouse. Come on in and meet some of our guests. Well, here we have Eleanor Bradley and Miss Joyce Nazari, two of our most popular playmates, and Lenny Bruce, foremost exponent of sick humor and...
Oh! Isn't that sick?
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago.
It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much. Chris Baronis, you were going to make a point before the break.
It's just to say when these types of things happen, these tragedies, conflicting information, that's exactly what was happening in the moments after the tragedy. We have to wait and listen for the facts to come in. We don't know what motivated him to kill all those people in that nightclub. But the second more important thing,
wait a minute. We do know, and this happened with this,
we know
this
that happened his with, dad. We know no, that his
no,
dad.
No, but here's else we know. We also know, according to CBS News, that he called 911.
Correct.
And he pledged his allegiance to
correct.
ISIS. We know that, and we know that about 2 hours later, ISIS acknowledged and took credit for what happened. So he clearly was inspired by his radical belief in ISIS and what they stand for.
You're led to believe that potentially ISIS motivated or put him up to it. This could also be ISIS trying to be relevant because right now they're losing land. They're losing their war.
But wait a minute. What we do know is on Gay Pride Day, he goes into a gay club and he massacres 50 Americans and wounds 53 more. There's no question this is an attack fueled by homophobia.
Maybe it's just the fact that he knew that it was well attended.
You know what's important here? The most important thing is 50 Americans were murdered today, and 53 Americans, 50 were killed, and 53 Americans. The fact that they were gay, it really, in a broader sense, it is irrelevant.
Yeah, completely.
If you are an American, no matter what your persuasion is, you should be outraged that the worst. This is the second, other than the 9/11. This is the worst attack in the history of this country.
I agree.
People
with
should be outraged.
But it is relevant.
It's tied to it. I agree with
it. It's relevant because radical Islam thinks homosexuality is an abomination. It's part of its theology, but
you know
radical Islam
you know, here's
also
something else they don't. They don't like women in pantsuits.
Correct.
Either.
Correct. Oh. Radical Islam also rejects our economic system, our military, Hollywood. Fort Hood happened. I wouldn't be surprised, God help us, if something happened in Hollywood or if something happened on Wall Street. This is an attack on our system. This is an attack on who we are. Or, that's
absolutely.
What this is.
But I have to add to this, too. We have to remember, we keep talking about radical Islam, and yes, we should if that's really what the case is, but he was an American citizen, born and raised in this country. So when we're talking about terrorism, we're just not looking at people coming in over our borders. We have to look at what's happening here and what's happening with tolerance.
So question for you. Could a U.S. citizen be a radical Islamist?
Well, obviously this man is. So the question is, how do we protect ourselves from who's born and raised here? Because the conversation that I hear going on nationwide is close our borders because we don't know who's coming in.
Well, people have already come in. So it's not just that they're just now coming in. These are people that have also come in and somewhere, you know, within the past one or two generations. A lot of these people are these 20-year-olds that are committing this. I'm sorry, I don't know the age of the gentleman.
29.
But, you know, you're talking about these 20-year-olds who are first generation in this country. So it's not just a matter of who's coming in now. It's about what Donald Trump talks about is let's start looking at who we're starting to let in now.
Not all our mass shooters are first generation.
Well,
we
have to look at all the statistics.
Saying after this daily mass shooting in America, this one happened to be done by a Muslim. This one happened to be clearly homophobic, you know, driven. Saying close the borders after that is sort of like saying, you know, let's invade Iraq when we get attacked on 9/11.
I mean,
there is
no one's
relationship
right now.
Right? But that's what you didn't know. People are saying
saying close the borders.
Your friend to your right just said it a moment ago, Chris, because there's no relationship.
I was watching.
Let's let her speak for herself. Sherry?
Well, first of all, I'm not convinced that this was an attack on homosexuals. I don't know what goes on in the minds of someone who's a radical Islamist. I don't know that, and none of us know it, probably.
If you walk into a gay bar on a Saturday night with 300 gays there, don't you think that he knew that?
Listen, I lived in New York City. I've been on Christopher Street. I've had, you know, many encounters of being around my gay friends and hanging out with them and being to these clubs. So it's not the fact that even all of the people that were there were gay or homosexual. I think that we have to stop trying to read the minds of people who are committing these acts. I think we have to be open to the prospect that these are Americans that are in this club. It's not always that it's an attack on gays.
Do you think it's a based on what has been reported, do you think it's a huge jump when his father says...
Speculatively, you would have to assume this, yes.
Yeah, okay, well, that's good. Well,
absolutely.
That's a short
I think
putt.
He sought out homosexuals. I thought he sought out to massacre homosexuals.
Right, to go to a gay bar at 2 in the morning.
The point is, being a devotee and a devout follower of ISIS, then really... That brand of Islam basically says that you were to kill anybody that you disagree with.
That's right, or who disagrees with you.
That's right.
Right.
So I mean we can't forget that when we're talking about radical Islam, it isn't just the billions of people who are Islam. It's the people who really believe that you know you follow the letter of the law and you're out to kill anybody.
In fact, I mean it. To your point, you're right. That tiny slice. Is in fact dangerous. No question. That tiny slice is dangerous. But you know what? This is a teachable moment for the country because the people that feel like, hey, look, we need to focus on radical Islamists, now's the time for those people to embrace, hey, when I embrace Western values, I embrace tolerance of gay people. That's hard for some people to do. Some people are in a tough position.
Why is that not mutually exclusive?
Hold on.
Why is it? I don't understand. Can you?
How can
I don't understand.
Because you can't at this moment say the problem is radical Islamics, Islamicists rather, and then say, but I'm not so sure about homosexuality. Because to Chris's point, the fundamental driver that we have a problem with these radical Islamicists is that they hate and want to kill people that they disagree with. That includes gay people.
So we have to embrace them as part of us. And if you don't,
it's mutually inconsistent. Embrace homosexuals.
Dan, tell me what tolerance means.
I think that's
define that. What is tolerance for homosexuals? What does that mean?
Within the
context of a Western civilization, the United States.
On a day like today is to say clearly this was an attack on our gay community.
Yes.
And anybody.
It was, without question.
You know what? Not a lot of people are willing
come on,
to say.
Dan.
But there's
got to
be an acceptance,
you know, the other
part, too.
Chris, you're a progressive Republican.
No, quite the contrary.
Guess
no,
what? Right?
Quite the contrary. Right? You know, I think the implication of your statement, the reason why it rubs me wrong is because the implication that people who maybe had an intellectual disagreement with the idea of gay marriage are somehow analogous to people in Saudi Arabia, to Sharia, to Wahhabists.
You know,
gay Americans are protected by the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. They're Americans.
That's great, Chris.
That's our way of life.
Chris,
that's who we are.
Nothing wrong with people. Wrong with Republicans. Go on, I'm sorry.
Laura. This goes back to tolerance. And what's very frightening to me is how many people are out there and saying that, oh, it was a gay bar. That weren't as disturbed as when this happened at a school or in a movie theater, but they were almost okay that it was this population. And we are a country.
Where did that assumption come from?
Well, it's happening. It's out there because you hear it all the time.
It's a hate crime.
Hate crimes continually happen.
Everyone is saying that it's horrific.
Every day. I agree. I mean, the people I talk to say it is, but I hear a lot of hatred going on in our country right now.
You're going to deny that?
I hear a lot of people coming out and saying it's okay.
Where is the hatred?
Sherry, go ahead.
I'd like to know where the hatred is. I think it's, you know, one thing I've had, you know, that's kind of rubbed me the wrong way with the Obama administration is that from day one, from the beer garden scenario of this supposedly highly educated Harvard professor being upset with the police asking him, you know, doing their job and asking him about the getting into the house and he lost his keys and so forth. And so he challenges the police. Who does that? So it becomes from that day one situation that now all of a sudden we've got all this racial upheaval. And I honestly just, I don't understand where it came from. I'm not understanding where it's going. And I also don't understand the fact that people want to be segregated. Gays want to be segregated. Women want to be segregated. Blacks want to be segregated. When do we become Americans? Because as far as I'm concerned, as a Republican, I'm a black American. I'm not an African American. I'm a black American. I'm proud of this country. I'm proud to be an American citizen. But I don't want to be lumped into a group just because of how you look at me. So I don't understand where this hatred conversation is coming from. I personally don't feel it. I've been in all different types of cultures and neighborhoods and so forth. I just don't feel that. So where is this hatred?
Yeah. Well, I think it's coming from the top. I mean, I think the proposed Republican candidate for president right now has insulted just about every group, and it's made it okay.
I haven't seen any insults come. I haven't heard them. Listen, I'm not going to pull it out.
Muslims. He's insulted Mexicans.
I met this magazine from 2004, and this man looks exactly as he does today. This is Donald Trump.
But does he say the same things?
He says the same things. He acts the same way.
No, he doesn't say the same things, though.
I have heard Donald Trump is someone that I grew up with along, you know, just in time. And I've seen him.
We all did.
I just have never felt or seen or heard anything negative from Donald Trump regarding, let's say, black Americans. I just have not. And the thing that I think that people are catching hold to is because he's outspoken, which he's always been outspoken. Just because someone's outspoken, does that make cause for you to be a bigot? Are you telling me I don't have the free right of speech?
I'll tell you what makes you a bigot. Is saying we should ban Muslims from our country. It also makes you fundamentally un-American and absolutely unfit to be the president of the United States.
I don't think we have to take him, you know, word
at
for
his
word.
Word.
I think we
I don't
have
know. I like to listen to the
word.
President and
really,
nominee
you know
and say
what?
What he.
I have to.
I kind of listen
you.
To what he says.
Bruce, I haven't watched television. I didn't watch the debates because I didn't want to hear the propaganda.
Okay.
I want to make my own decision.
We have to pause right now. 1-800-723-8029. When we come back on the other side of this break, you're going to be introduced to Jeff Giesing, and he has lots to say about how to fight recruitment online by Islam.
The Signal, a rockin' new hit musical. From doo-wop to the king of pop, blues, to the Beatles, gospel, to great radio hits. The Signal, the musical about a steel town and its street corner sounds. Starring live, the Spaniels, Hall of Famer Willie Rogers of the Soul Stirrers, and Stormy Weather. August 12th, 13th, and 14th. Tickets on sale now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications box office or TicketWeb.com.
I'm Hugh Hefner, editor, publisher of Playboy magazine, and your host. And this is Playboy's Penthouse. Come on in and meet some of our guests. Well, here we have Eleanor Bradley and Miss Joyce Nazari, two of our most popular playmates, and Lenny Bruce, foremost exponent of sick humor and...
Oh! Isn't that sick?
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago for quite some time now. Whenever there's been an incident like this, there has been, especially as it's related to a possible radical Islamist, there's been a discussion as to how much the social media in America and the world, how much social media is responsible for ginning up interest and hatred against the United States. And hopefully, in many cases, the United States has been trying to thwart that. They haven't been as successful as they would like to be. A gentleman by the name of Jeff Giese joins us now. He has written an article recently for a NATO journal. He was invited to a NATO conference to address the issue of what can be done for the United States and the West. What can they do to improve the likelihood of using online digital social media warfare, if you will, to stop the success, the growing success of ISIS online. So, Jeff, nice to have you with us. I hope I've summarized what your article is about, but give us, in your view, the major points of that article, and especially in light of what we know right now about the shooter in Orlando, how do we react and what should we be doing as a country to stop recruitment of even U.S. citizens?
Thank you, Bruce. So I think at the end of the day, we have to win the battle of ideas, and that's what memetic warfare is about. And that's the root issue here, is we have a global violent Islamic insurgency that's popping up, and it's kind of like, it's almost like, I look at it like a startup. It's this virtual insurgency that anybody anywhere can kind of latch onto and be inspired by, and then in turn commit, you know, lone wolf acts or acts of terror like we unfortunately have seen in Orlando. Mm-hmm. So what my article was basically about was more aggressively waging war in the battle of ideas. To date, we've seen the think again, turn away strategy from the State Department. We've seen very top-down strategies. We've seen efforts to shut down a lot of accounts. But what we haven't seen is a more comprehensive kind of digital counterinsurgency approach where we're, taking a lot of different approaches and, you know, getting down to their level and actually winning the battle of ideas in that respect. And that means, you know, actually weaponizing trolling against them. It also means having a sort of digital social work where we can help de-radicalize people who, you know, reach out to them and help them get off of that track.
How do you release? Because part of this, you say weaponizing the trolls. How do you weaponize the trolls and define what a troll is for people that may not be familiar with that term?
Yeah, so trolling typically has a negative connotation. They're kind of the annoying people on the internet. But the way I think of them in this context is they're sort of guerrilla warriors of social media and media. And there are trolls who do things for good, just like hackers. And then there are trolls who do things for bad. So it's kind of like a hacker or, you know, a PR type person. So, you know, trolling them back, disrupting, you know, right now, just like a startup, they can advertise their offering around the world globally instantly through social media and the internet. They can rapidly acquire new users and new followers if they can kind of convert them to their way and reach them with their propaganda. So, you know, you remember the Osama bin Laden video from 2004 when he took credit for 9/11. You know, at that point, he sent the tape into Al Jazeera, and then Al Jazeera played it. And we all have, or many of us have that memory imprinted on our heads. Well, today they're doing it with cell phones and it's in real time. So we have, you know, real time, rapid, globalized information. And there are ways to counter that, disrupt it, you know, kind of meet it and turn it against them. And that's the type of warfare that I'm talking about.
In your article, you referenced, and again, it's perhaps germane to what we're talking about on the broadcast this evening and the attack on the gay bar last night. And that is, you've suggested that maybe there's a way to enlist the gay activists of the world online in an effort. How would that work? Explain the thinking behind that.
Yeah, so the broader idea here is we need creative new ways to help counter these threats because they're very complex and multi-pronged, and we're not going to get it right the first time. We just have to keep continuously improving. And one of the things that we've seen after each, you know, past terror things is citizen involvement. I mean, we have groups like Anonymous. We have citizens in many ways doing more and better the role that governments historically played. So I think there's a role for kind of citizen counterinsurgents, if you will, in helping counter terror. So when there's an act of terrorism, rather than making it a propaganda victory for the enemy, a propaganda victory for the Islamic State in this case, how can citizens get involved and actually counter that and make it a victory for unity and American values and, you know, all the things that we stand for, and in turn kind of make their act of terror backfire on them?
To what extent do we have to have increased government surveillance of the internet, of our daily lives, to identify and root out those Americans who live amongst us, who have been radicalized and are offended and outraged and cannot deal if they happen to see two gay men kissing on a street in Miami, or they don't like the way that a woman is dressed walking down the street?
Yeah, it's complex, especially when we're talking about domestic versus international. And living in a democracy, I think it's an important conversation to have. How do we manage this in a way that respects our democracy and our values and laws? And at the same time, really acknowledges and recognizes the threats for what it is. And obviously, there's a huge difference in between an everyday Muslim and somebody who's been radicalized and ready to commit an act of terror. In fact, there's even a difference between somebody who's conservative Islam or may even share some of those beliefs versus somebody who actually is preparing to commit a violent attack. So those are distinctions that we need to make, and they're kind of tricky to predict. So I think that some monitoring, you know, a lot of this stuff is public and transparent. So, I think we definitely should be monitoring that, using artificial intelligence to get smarter about pattern recognitions that might indicate somebody's on the verge of doing something negative. I think there's a deeper conversation, you know, regarding NSA and tapping phones and all that stuff. I think that there's a conversation that needs to be had there. I don't really have an opinion on that, but I do think that we do need to be vigilant of public information for sure, and also, frankly, have citizens involved in that effort.
When you participated in the NATO conference, what was your takeaway? What were the questions that you were asked? What were you challenged most on when you made this presentation to the leaders of the West?
Well, I think in many ways, a lot of the technologies and tools are now in the hands of citizens that, and so in some ways, citizens are getting ahead of governments, and governments aren't really used to that. That's uncomfortable to them. And so just like there's disruptive technology in a startup that may go into an industry and disrupt it, similarly, these types of movements that are happening are really disrupting the normal way of defense and even how we think about communications and propaganda mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. So I think there's a general concern about, oh, my mm-hmm. God, we're being disrupted. Our old ways of doing things aren't working anymore. How do we handle this, and how do we do it in a way that respects our democratic values in this globalized information marketplace that's real time?
What has been the reaction today on the internet to this incident? And has there been a significant amount of response that would be maybe in supportive of the shooter?
I mean, I've been on Twitter following it. I've been on Facebook. I think there's been some noise supporting the shooter. I haven't Amaq News Agency, which is sort of like the Reuters of the Islamic State, if you will. It's their main news agency. I don't mean to criticize Reuters, but it's their main news agency. And they came out with a statement taking credit for the attack, claiming it was done by an IS fighter. And the way their propaganda works is they have very centralized agencies, and then they have lots of people around the world using all kinds of different accounts to help spread their message through Twitter, through Facebook, through Telegram accounts and different chat type accounts and on different websites and so forth. So I think there's been some, you know, buzz from them, but overwhelmingly it's been on the other side of the issue. And I think people like all of us who are deeply saddened, frustrated, mm-hmm. concerned, we see lots of different issues at play in this incident and are just trying to wrap our heads around what happened and how to make sense of it.
What should or what could the average American watching or listening to this program do if they wanted to participate in this effort that you're talking about, where citizens are rising up? Can they do it individually, or do they have to be looking for some broader group to participate in so they are following some sort of a strategy?
Yeah, I mean, I think Stanley McChrystal has this famous expression that says it takes a network to defeat a network. And I think the American people are in the world, you know, there's so many creative, brilliant people out there, and using your ideas to help think about ways to counter the effects of this terror. And there are lots of different ways for that, and different people have different political motivations and agendas, and that's fine. My recommendation would be, you know, even if you're joining a hashtag campaign that already exists and you're posting it on Facebook, that's still doing good, because we're changing the information environment that they're operating in. We're changing the impact that this is having at the propaganda level.
Jeff,
so even if you think it's kind of lame just to spread a hashtag, that actually does have an impact.
Jeff, we thank you very much for being with us. That's Jeff Giese joining us from Washington this evening. I'm Bruce Dumont, 1-800-723-8029. We will continue shortly from Chicago.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that We can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We have callers on the line. Let's go to Jason, listening to us in Washington, D.C. on Sirius XM satellite radio. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, I was just going to comment that I think in this situation, the best thing to do is just wait and stop politicizing it. Hell, people aren't even buried yet, and all of these people are experts.
Well,
everybody's,
I mean,
an expert. They all have the answer what to do tomorrow.
Well, I don't.
Your earlier guest pointing out the fact that this is a U.S. citizen, and then of course, what's the knee-jerk reaction from all the Trumpers and stuff? Oh, we got to close the borders. Like, this wouldn't have stopped it. Oh, we need more stringent gun laws. Guess what? The guy got the guns. Legally.
Yeah. No, I hear you, and you know the reaction. That's what I'm saying is you are right, but when information comes out, we were just talking before the break that there was a leader of the Muslim community in Orlando who was one of those that spoke in the collective press briefing this morning, and I thought he did a wonderful job. And Chris was saying, well, say what you said, and then I'll respond.
You
were criticizing him because...
That Muslim leader in particular, I saw most of what he said, almost all of it.
Yeah.
He said, let's not jump to conclusions. Okay. Right in the wake of the massacre, absolutely. But you know what I would like to hear from him is violence is violence and we condemn it. We don't want this. We're not part of it. That's not who we are. That's what I would have liked to have heard. It doesn't matter who committed the atrocity, but he should have took a stand against violence.
This comment today was before he was identified and before there was the report of the 911 call, 911 call to the Orlando police. So there was a lot of information not known at that point. I found it interesting that the president's speech today to the nation followed the release of the information by CBS News that the 911 call had been made and that he pledged allegiance to ISIS. The president did not make any comment about that. As you say, he was talking about his pet topic, gun control, but he avoided saying that. Now,
well, you have to also remember that Obama said that ISIS was a JV team. We could take them out anytime we want to. So he, all along, he's been minimizing the effect that these people have had and can have.
Now, let me say this.
Go ahead, Dan.
No, after you. That's fine. I mean,
my question is, do you agree? We'll be back to you in just a moment, Jason. Do you agree conservative Americans or some Americans are upset because the president cannot get the words out, radical Islam, and they say the same thing about Hillary Clinton? What is so difficult about getting those words out if we are identifying it as radical Islam? We're not saying all of Islam.
Yeah. Here's why.
And is this not an example of radical Islam?
Here's why. But first, let me just say on ISIS, and what do I know? We don't have any information. But it sure seemed like the guy said, yeah, I pledge allegiance to ISIS. I probably never talked to anybody besides I'm, anti-gay, and I'm going to kill people, and I'm a devout, self-proclaimed devout person. And if I'm ISIS or you're in this, news agency or whatever, would you really say like, no, we have no relationship with the guy? Or would you claim credit for any nut job who wants to commit any act of terror whatsoever? My point is, when you say radical Islam, it conjures up this idea that like this guy's a like a sleeper cell, and there are people out there that are like planting people around our country. They're going to rise up upon command.
And they're not.
What it sounded like to me.
What's wrong with that?
Is why? Because
is that not true?
It sure didn't look that way to me. If somebody just says, "Hey, you know what? I'm motivated by hatred. I take the worst elements of my religion, the worst elements of my religion that says kill gay people. Yeah, you know, women should be subjugated, right?
But you're splitting hairs.
And then, well, no, like here's really the difference. Are. Like, understand.
In this particular case, it isn't just the worst elements of the religion. The religion itself hates gays.
Now listen to
this. The religion itself hates gays.
So you're
period.
So here's the difference. There are people in our. This is a teachable moment. Muslims don't hate gays any more than Christians hate gays.
Christians don't hate gays.
Okay, well, how about this? In the Old Testament, there are violent anti-gay biblical verses. No question.
For instance,
like Sodom and Gomorrah.
So Sodom was
the entire
Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed because there were no people there who. And I'm not going to take this as a teachable moment as a Christian. I'm just saying that Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed because from God's standpoint, there were no righteous people there who believed in God, and they turned against him.
And part of the reason they turned against him is that they were practicing homosexuality.
That wasn't why they turned against them.
Look, let me finish my quick point. There's no question there are people that can read the Bible and say, I read this, my reading of the Bible as a Christian. There are people today that say we must hate homosexuality.
And those people are wrong to say that because
just
Christians
like the
are
radical
not taught
Islam,
to
just like the
well,
people
let's talk
are
about
radical
the people
Islam.
Reading
the
Quran.
The same, right.
Jason, go ahead.
It's
back,
the same
back
thing.
Back to Jason. Back to Jason. Go ahead.
I'll just keep it really simple. You know, it's interesting. The best thing that I remember about it is I remember there was some guy that was a member of the Taliban, and he said, one drone attack has done more to get followers to come over to my side than years of proselytizing in my area.
That's ridiculous.
How many people have we killed, innocent people, through drone attacks? And again, what are we doing? Why are we over there? Do we expect no blowback from people that, again, are crazy and are going to look for anything?
No, I think we get blowback from that. Yeah. You know, but I would also happen to believe that we would get blowback no matter what. No matter what. And you know why? Because it has nothing to do with the drone attacks. It has nothing to do whether they're losing or not. They, when I say they, I mean radical Islamists and maybe even moderate Islamists, maybe, let me stress that, they don't like us. They hate us. They don't like the fact that we can go to a gay nightclub on a Saturday night. They don't like women that wear pantsuits that go along without having their heads covered. They don't like us. They don't like the way we drink. They don't like anything about us.
And can I add something to that, too?
Yes.
We talk about, you know, everybody's reacting and everybody has something to say. And I think part of the reason is we can't get our heads around this. We can't get our heads around the fact that one man took two weapons, went into a nightclub where people were just enjoying themselves and killed 50 people and injured 52 others. And this is something, as Americans with freedoms, we don't want to see happening in our society. And we're trying to figure out, why is it happening and where is the blame?
Because it's impossible to get and focus on the people who want to do harm, whether it's a church in Charleston or it's a gay nightclub in Orlando. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago.
It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
I'm Hugh Hefner, editor-publisher of Playboy magazine, and your host. And this is Playboy's Penthouse. Come on in and meet some of our guests. Well, here we have Eleanor Bradley and Miss Joyce Nazari, two of our most popular playmates, and Lenny Bruce, foremost exponent of sick humor and...
Oh! Isn't that sick?
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. We continue our discussion of the situation in Orlando, Florida, the mass murder today, the largest mass murder in the history of this country. Dave Ross joins us. He is the assignment editor for WESH-TV. That is the NBC affiliate in Orlando. And, Dave, thank you very much for being with us and sharing. I know it's a very, very busy day for anyone in the news business. But bring us up to date. What is the new news that you have learned, let's say, in the last couple of 3 hours?
Really, the death toll stands the same. 50 people were killed, 59 were injured. Right now, they are in the process of extracting the bodies from the club. They admit that this is going to be an extremely long time. They have pulled some out this evening. They have right now called it the night from best we can tell and probably will resume in the morning. Aside from that, really, the notification of the next of kin continues. We have a crew at a hotel which served as a staging ground for families to try and get information and some dramatic stuff as the families found out that their loved ones had either died on the table at ORMC across the street or otherwise were found inside of the club. Emotional reaction as you see families hearing the worst.
One of the things I think that has not been said, or at least maybe it's said this afternoon that I have not seen it, but in the early news that I was watching, and I was watching NBC Network News breaking into Meet the Press today, is that the other thing that I think everyone has to realize, because we have been fearful, you know, we have had school shootings, we've had shootings at schools, we've had office complex in San Bernardino, and now we've had a gay nightclub. And it could be any nightclub, but it happened to be a gay nightclub last night. And there have been all these threats and concerns about, well, what happens when they start going after our shopping malls? I think what this says is that really there is no place that is immune where we can be totally safe. And I think another big part of this story is Orlando is one of the top tourist attractions in the United States. You're getting into your prime, you know, season of tourists coming, millions of people, tens of millions of people coming from all over the world to Orlando. And I'm wondering, has there been any at least discussion of the potential tourism impact of what happened today in your hometown there, Dave?
And then, as you know, and not to talk, you know, inside media, that's second and third day stuff. We're still really in first day material and getting the victim's notification and all that kind of stuff. There have been multiple press conferences, and there's still so much unknown as to motive behind this. And right now I'm looking at our broadcast of his ex-wife talking about what kind of person he is. And we're talking to the imam down in South Florida. And so we're still trying to put together exactly what the motive is and why this particular club may have been targeted. I mean, there's still a lot of of you know, questions that are out there, but certainly the impact on tourism, you can say all you want, as you and I both know, that Orlando is safe and the tourists are safe, but what impact it's going to have, especially on the overseas markets that you know, sometimes viewed Orlando as and Florida as wild, wild west, what impact this is going to have, that's still to play out down the line.
Now, a couple of weeks ago, this is on YouTube today, there was a couple of weeks ago on one of these stations in Orlando, there was an imam who was interviewed, and again, he basically said that, you know, killing gays was fine and no problem with it, and actually it's a reward because you're, in essence, I'm paraphrasing now, basically putting them out of their punishment and their shame for being gay. Has there been much response to that, and how has the Muslim community reacted in Orlando, not only to that outrageous statement of a couple of weeks ago, but in the wake of what happened last night?
Right now, it's all concerned. We're not concerned about statements that have been made in the past. Right now, it's all concerned about healing the community right here and right now. There are, even as we speak now, that we are covering some services at local mosques. And the GLBT community, of course, has rallied around and really are just praying for the victims. There, I don't think there's been a stepping back and taking a look at why any particular group was targeted at this point.
And the FBI has taken the lead in all the investigation, working closely with your local officials there?
Yes, absolutely.
And any other last point based on the news that you've learned today? You mentioned the interview with the ex-wife, and also there was an interview earlier with his father. Did she add any relevant thing to the discussion of who this guy was?
Dan, I was on with you, so I have to go back and listen to it myself. But
okay.
You took priority. You took priority. So
I do appreciate it. Go back and let us know, okay? Dave Ross, thank you very much for being with us tonight. Assignment editor for WESH-TV. That is the NBC affiliate in Orlando, Florida. Let's go to calls. Let's know. We've got a lot of people standing by. 1-800-723-8029. Let's go to Tim, listening in Chicago. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, Bruce. Two quick points. I would first like to say in support of Trump that there's a fundamental difference between common sense and racism. Racism involves abuse of power. Trump is simply speaking truth to power. It's simply common sense that you want to secure the borders and protect the citizens. The other thing quickly to say is that we can do a pretty good job of shutting down child pornography online. If terrorism isn't pornography, I don't know what it is. We should be equally able to shut down terrorism websites in the same way we shut down child pornography. Those would be the two points to make.
You think that's a good idea, Chris?
If you talk to a lot of people in the intelligence community, they use these feeds,
right.
these Facebook, Twitter, whatever, to monitor and track terrorist activity. This has been really useful to stop terrorism, to prevent massacres like this from happening before. So, I mean, I don't know about the second point. The first point, for me, Trump's an illegitimate candidate and an illegitimate person, period. So everything he says to me is...
And you're a Republican.
And I'm a conservative Republican.
Where are you going to go in
November? He doesn't speak for me.
Where are you going to go in November?
I think I'm giving Johnson and Weld a serious look.
Where does this incident last night and the what we're talking about right now, from a political standpoint, do you think this benefits or hurts Donald Trump?
It could break either way, because right now we've got people across the country who are angry, scared, and grieving. And those are volatile emotions. And when someone is seized by those emotions, they obviously look towards a leader, someone who looks and sounds tough. And I suppose that could break Trump's way. Although there could be a scenario where people look at Trump and they just see this guy, he's not ready. He's not ready. He's all talk. He can't back it up, and I don't want this guy. This guy's not a steady hand. If we have a terrorist attack and he's president, he's not the guy who we want behind the wheel.
They said the same thing about Obama, that he was inexperienced. He didn't vote when he was in the Senate and so forth. He was young. He was, you know, not ready. So,
are they right?
I don't want to make this an Obama bashing moment for me, because I don't think I've seen much that has come out of his administration. I think there's some.
So I guess, but all of the criticism that was said about Obama, is that also germane to
how somebody would describe Donald Trump? I think his experience in foreign policy has been extremely clear when it comes to Russia. I think it's in dealing with Putin. I think it's been extremely clear when, you know, it comes to dealing with ISIS and calling them a JV team. I mean, what are you looking at and what news are you reading if you want to just downgrade what these folks are able to do and the access they have?
I want to find out when we come back. I want to find out how Donald Trump trumps that in identifying himself, and I want to hear from our Democrats as well. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. How do you come down on what happened in Orlando yesterday? And is there any way it can ever be resolved? Or is this something we're just going to have to deal with every couple of 3 weeks? Extra.
I'm Hugh Hefner, editor-publisher of Playboy magazine, and your host. And this is Playboy's Penthouse. Come on in and meet some of our guests. Well, here we have Eleanor Bradley and Miss Joyce Nazari, two of our most popular playmates, and Lenny Bruce, foremost exponent of sick humor and...
Oh! Isn't that sick?
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let me ask our Democrats. You'll probably give me the predictable answer, but is there a clear victor politically as to how this is going to be played? I mean, the point was made that Donald Trump has a very strong persona. He said things about Muslims. He said things about people coming into the country. He has talked a tougher game than Hillary Clinton. Is that what the audience wants to hear?
I'll go first. I think after, you know, the Bernie Sanders campaign, when Hillary Clinton just wiped the floor with Bernie on gun control and gun safety, I think the Americans that are coming to the view that this is ridiculous in our country, I think that group is
gun
growing.
Laws would have already have happened.
So what I think is happening is that the Democratic intensity for gun control is growing.
Yeah.
And I think those swing voters, especially, I think they're leaning the gun control way. And I think in a horrible incident like this, it keeps putting those sort of Second Amendment fundamentalists in a smaller and smaller box.
Okay, so this, in your view, by playing that card, it helps Sir chances in winning Ohio and Pennsylvania?
I think it's moving that way.
Okay.
I think Laura? It comes down to temperament. Because in a crisis like this, people are looking for a leader who's calm and in control. And I'm a Hillary supporter, but she is a woman who is calm and in control. And you don't see her getting emotional. You see her getting to the issue. When we hear Trump speak, it's all emotion. And in a situation like this, we really want a leader who can grasp what the facts are, bring us together as a country, and help move us forward.
Would you acknowledge that someone who is reacting in an emotional way, however, is far more likely to move the needle than someone who is calm and collected and diplomatic? Because there are people who are outraged when these things happen. Our life in America has changed. It may change forever. The next incident may be in a shopping mall. And each one of those incidents, someone's going to say, will someone go up and get up there and scream and blow their stack? And she's not going to do that. She's going to be calm and collected, and she's going
to... But she's going to be strong. And she's going to be to the point, and she's going to be in control. I don't. I view that as a strength, but I view the emotional, you know, jumping off the cliff, screaming and yelling is not something we need right now. We need somebody who is going to first calm us down, because as we can hear in all our conversations here, we're all emotional. We can't believe this happened. And we want somebody who can say, okay, this was awful. I mean, this was the worst thing that could ever happen in our country. And how are we going to go forward together?
Laura, is there a moment in recent political history where the candidate that steps up and says something calm and collected is going to win over someone that may seize an emotional moment?
Barack Obama.
What was the emotional moment he seized?
I think when every time Barack Obama was criticized as being, you know, Mr. Spock, and I think John McCain was a lot more emotional than Barack Obama was. I think Mitt Romney ginned it up more than Barack Obama. I don't think anyone ever said Barack Obama is like emotionally resonant.
I'm talking about in the wake of an attack on the United States where Americans have been killed. Do you think, from a political standpoint now, purely political, do you think that when George Bush took that bullhorn in New York City and shouted out or told everybody that the people who did this are going to pay for it, do you think that was he thinking about that? Was it an emotional response? Because you know what? I think that was probably the finest moment in George Bush's life. I think his support, because people want something done.
I think the leader that you're talking about was Rudy Giuliani.
Mm.
Because here's a guy who wore it on his sleeve. You knew that he was in pain about what happened. He grieved. But he was also a guy, when you looked at him behind that lectern and he had that FDNY hat, you knew this guy was in charge. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want. A guy who says this was a tragedy. We're going to get past it, though. We're going to figure out what happened. And we'll be the people that we're supposed to be.
And hopefully he will be Trump's VP on the ticket. That would be a fantastic, ticket for our next election.
Eliminate New York, of course, you're not going to get New York anyway.
Well, you know, here's my position. I want to kind of go back to this emotional situation. It's unfortunate that people see someone like Donald Trump was a very fervent speaker. I mean, this is a very powerful man. I appreciate his fervency, and I love the way he speaks. And that's one thing I think that's gotten him to where he is right now and why we're all talking about Donald Trump. If Hillary even makes it to the election, possibly she's going to be indicted before that happens. Hopefully someone will finally bring down the hammer on these folks who are in our government and they're committing crimes. So hopefully that will happen before she even gets to November. But I don't think it really says anything one way or the other about someone and how they speak. We all thought that Jimmy Carter was going to be a savior, and he was so softly spoken, and we were happy to have him, and he turned out to be a complete failure at the end of his presidency. So I don't think there's a real argument for or against being soft-spoken.
Let me go back to the very beginning. And by the way, it's hard to believe 1 year ago today, Donald Trump was not a candidate. His anniversary is coming up later this week.
Wow.
His birthday is coming up on Tuesday. He's going to be 70 years old. Wow. He has been presidential for less than 1 year at this very moment.
Wow.
So we're talking about one of the great phenomenons, whether you like him or hate him, the history of the country, what he's been able to do. But my question to you, going back to those first couple of speeches, when he made the comment about Mexico, when he made the comment about Mexicans, and he said, they're not sending their best. There's murderers, rapists, and maybe some good people, too. Do you think by lumping murderers and rapists in with all of those from Mexico who've come into the United States illegally, do you think that was a wise political statement? Because he's never been able to sort of get out from under that rock.
Well, I think
he's ticked off a lot of Hispanics, both illegal and legal. But at the same time, he's also inspired a lot of others. Now, was that a smart thing to say, or was it over the top?
You know, I think it may not have been a wise comment, only because people are typically not politically savvy. And so what they do is, instead of reading more into what this person's saying, they're going to take them at face value. So that person who can't discern between, you know, is this guy really serious about this, or does this pertain to another incident? We have to go back to when Jan Brewer was trying to enact her new laws there, where she wanted to stop and frisk in Arizona. We have to go back to that, because if anyone who knows what's going on in Mexico, unfortunately, there are drug cartels that have killed journalists. They have killed anyone who opposes what they're doing there. And because we have some of those cartels who've gone up into Arizona, and Jan was trying to do something about that problem with the kidnappings and the beheadings that were happening in Arizona, this is not a problem that's new. This is nothing new. This is what I believe Donald Trump is talking about. And if you want to ignore that those problems exist, then that's fine. Live in your world and not know what's really happening.
Should he have articulated at the beginning? And again, I don't think he can put the genie back in the bottle right now.
Right.
I don't think he can go back and say, well, you know, maybe the vast majority of Mexicans that come to this country. Okay.
Well, that's a better way to put it.
He's poisoned the well with. Mm-hmm. With the use of his rhetoric, and I'm wondering if that's a tendency, like he says, we're gonna ban all Muslims from coming to the United States.
Well, I think he has
how
to curb his speech. He's got to curb his speech and make it perhaps a little bit more succinct, so that those folks who don't want to read between the lines and those folks who want to jump on top of everything you say, you want to make it more succinct.
But Dave
in Hampshire, Illinois, we're gonna bring a call in. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi. Yeah, say I would like to just address the Democrat there. I think his name was Dan Johnson.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm good. Hope you're doing well.
Thanks, you too.
First of all, I'd like to say I think what happened in Orlando was horrible, and nobody should go around killing people because they disagree with their religious beliefs. But you said something to the effect, and I don't know if you misspoke, but you said people should not have the right to say they think homosexuality is a sin. And I think that's going down a dangerous road, because then you can say, well, no one can say they think abortion is a sin. There's a difference between saying we think something is immoral and saying we think we should be able to kill those people. I'm a Christian. I think homosexuality is immoral, but I still should love them, and I shouldn't kill them, but I have a right to say I think something is immoral.
I appreciate the clarification, you know. You're right. If people want to have their religious views, you can. But, you know, there's a fundamental tension, because it's easy. We don't like the radical Islamicist, for lack of a better term, from saying, of course you should kill gay people because they're sinful. And we also wouldn't like, and there are people like Pat Robertson who say, hey, God, you know, is punishing us with this horrible earthquake because of the sin of gay people. There's no question that there are people that can interpret the Bible to take the same conclusion of, well, you got to kill sinners. Most people, the vast majority, of course, don't say that. The vast majority of people that think homosexuality is sin, of course, don't want to kill people.
No.
But you're raising a real tension that when we call out, as we should, the fundamentalists in the Muslim religion that think killing people because they're sinful is okay, we need to be careful as well about how we handle this in our culture as well.
I think you're right. We do need to be careful about how we say these things, and it goes for you too. But you need to be careful and not say that people don't have a right to say certain things are a sin. I mean, if there's a Catholic priest who says that, you know, I can't marry these people because it's against my religion, are we going to say they're hateful and force them to marry people?
That's what they say.
Well, you know, Dave,
10 seconds.
Well, we'll do it next time. I don't have a 10-second response.
Dave, thank you very much for being with us back shortly from Chicago.
The Signal, a rockin' new hit musical. From doo-wop to the king of pop blues, to the Beatles, gospel, to great radio hits. The Signal, the musical about a steel town and its street corner sounds. Starring live, The Spaniels, Hall of Famer Willie Rogers of the Soul Stirrers, and Stormy Weather. August 12th, 13th, and 14th. Tickets on sale now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications box office or TicketWeb.
I'm Hugh Hefner, editor-publisher of Playboy magazine, and your host. And this is Playboy's Penthouse. Come on in and meet some of our guests. Well, here we have Eleanor Bradley and Miss Joyce Nazari, two of our most popular playmates, and Lenny Bruce, foremost exponent of sick humor and...
Oh! Isn't that sick?
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. We continue our discussion of the massacre in Orlando, Florida, where 50 Americans were killed last night, and it is now reported 59 have been reported as wounded, according to the recent report from Orlando. And again, this afternoon, President Obama went to the airwaves to address the American people and to talk about those that were killed. And here is an excerpt of the president's remarks.
So this is a sobering reminder that attacks on any American, regardless of race, ethnicity, religion, or sexual orientation, is an attack on all of us and on the fundamental values of equality and dignity that define us as a country. And no act of hate or terror will ever change who we are or the values that make us Americans.
Do you think that people will be acting any differently from now on as a result of this, in the way they live their lives, Laura?
I think we're all a little frightened because you just don't know. You know, I have one son who's in college now, and life is just different. And I got an email from him or a text message from him not too long ago saying, we all just got text messages from the school. We're on lockdown because there's an active shooter. And so this is just something that was never something that I felt I had to live with. And our kids are getting sort of accustomed to it, which is frightening because they shouldn't have this fear in their lives. I mean, fortunately, in this situation, everybody was fine and they were, you know, able to go on with the rest of their day. But this is how our society has changed. And I'm not happy about it, and I don't think anybody is, because nobody wants to live in fear of going to the grocery store or going to a movie theater. We shouldn't have to have that, and we should be able to just live our lives as we please.
Sherry, is this the new normal?
I think it is a new normal, but I don't think it's new. This is not something that we're not accustomed to. We were afraid of the Russians. We've been afraid of German invasion. We've been afraid of the bomb being dropped on us. So I don't think that this, as a country, I don't think not having other than civil war fought on our territory, you know, there were times in our history where we've been afraid of this. And this terrorism from Muslims is not new. This is something that has gone back, since the 70s? I just think that it's intensified for various reasons. But I, too, have a son, Laura, in college, and I hate that they locked down a college because something happened across the country. I hate that fact because I don't feel that these people are a national threat when you do something in one place and then I'm going to, you know, it's going to be a simultaneous type of attack. So I don't like the fact
this
that
this actually happened on their campus, though. When they went into lockdown.
I don't like the fact that the children have to live under that.
Are we overreacting, Dan?
I think it depends what you ask about. I think, and you could call me a partisan hack, which I don't deny, but I think we are overreacting at the so-called radical Muslim threat, and I think we underreact at the new normal of daily mass shootings in our country. I think the idea that we sort of accept, well, it's a new normal, right? You're going to be on lockdown because in your college because, hey, people have guns and people with mental health issues, we don't take care of them. And, you know, there's just going to be a lot of random acts of violence in America, and that's the new normal. And I think we've underreacted to saying that's absurd and that's a fixable problem.
Chris Veronis, is this the new normal?
Do we have another hour?
Yeah,
I don't have children, so I think if you do have children, your worldview is different, mm-hmm. right? And you see it through their eyes. And I think there have been societies, the UK, Israel, who've lived through this, and I certainly wouldn't want to see the United States be that way. To go to a point Dan said, though, I mean, if it's true that these are such I'm laughing at Dan off camera, but if what you're saying is true about gun control, why is it that Barack Obama could not get a measure passed? If there's a national outcry like you're saying, why is it that two-thirds of the governors across the United States are Republican? Why is it that he's lost Democrats over each midterm? If this has been such a hue and cry out from the heartland of America, why aren't there gun laws?
I think it's moving in that direction. You know why? And I'll tell you why. Because I just came out of the Bernie Sanders campaign where the strongest argument Hillary had, which she used effectively every day of the week, was on gun control because she was stronger on it
than
Bernie.
And the reality is the United States is the only industrialized country that has guns guaranteed by the Constitution. You don't have any other nations.
I think also
in
this particular case, it's a little off target, I think, only because we're dealing with an American citizen.
Right.
We're dealing with someone who got his weapons legally.
Which begs the question.
He was a security guard. But he got it. And different states react differently to it. But my bigger, broader question, which is sort of brought up by what Jeff said earlier in the broadcast, is when we're measuring civil liberties against security, are we at a point where, as Americans, are you comfortable that the FBI or an agency of the government should be able to go to Google or should be able to go to Apple or go to any company that is involved in the digital revolution? Should they be able to go to those companies and demand the release of information? Yes or no?
And that's why we have an independent judiciary. You know, thank God.
But what do you think? What do you think?
I'm
should this,
probably...
Should this shooter's... Should all of his cell phone records, should they be available instantly as opposed to going through all kinds of court cases to see if Apple is going to release this guy's information?
When it comes to something like civil rights, constitutional rights, I'm very leery about laying a blanket absolution either way. It's case by case. That's why we have courts. We have FISA courts. This is the new normal is the tension right now about being free in an open society and being protected from terrorism.
I want to get everybody's reaction.
And that's a case-by-case thing.
I want to go back
to
Laura. Laura, what about it? In a case like this, do you think the American people and do you personally, do you feel that the FBI has the right to go in and ask Apple or Google or any of these companies for their records in a case like this that we're talking about right now?
It is a public-private partnership, and the shooter is deceased. So I would see no problem with them sharing that information.
Sherry, what do you agree with that?
I think that his records, yes, we should be able to access someone who is an assailant. Absolutely. On a blanket case, no, I don't want more surveillance over what I'm doing.
So is it triggered by the number of people killed? I mean, where would you draw it? Dan, do you agree with that?
I've read a little bit about Apple pushing back against the FBI and saying, if you really expect us to develop software that gives you the right to unlock any iPhone,
that's the point.
And think that doesn't get out there.
That's the point.
Right? I mean, and I think Apple's largely right. There is no such thing as a back door, which I think is the, you know, sort of like they can evade all security measures.
Apple did cooperate with Orlando. There was exchange of information.
Right.
But the example Dan's talking about, that's exceptional. That's in a different league.
In what way did they cooperate with in Orlando?
All I know is that Apple was sharing information, and that's it. It was just one of these flashes of news that you heard in the kind of onslaught of information.
And Facebook and Twitter, they can take those down easily. But again, also the monitoring. I mean, do people have objection here that the emails and the tweets and the Facebook accounts, should they be regularly monitored by government?
They are.
Listen, I met a young woman the other day in the work that I do, and she works for a large company, and she works on security for that company, the internet security tech. I'm not very savvy with their lingo. But she said, you know what, listen, don't worry about, you know, Google and Gmail. She said, your information's already out there. The government can already access it. So we're not talking about something that we're trying to prevent from happening. It's already done.
And if I have to be consistent, if I think Second Amendment fundamentalism, you know, puts Americans at risk, well, I think the First Amendment has to go through that same filter. I think you've got to balance people's rights not to be killed. In my view, I think these sort of fundamentalists on the Second Amendment that say, well, no matter how much public safety, no matter how many lives can be saved by reasonable regulations, I oppose it. Well, I think the same has to go with the right to free speech. We have to have some balance where, look, if you could stop somebody from having a nuclear bomb in the middle of downtown Chicago.
Can you qualify what you mean by that?
Yeah, look, I think there's no – I think in my view, the fact that common sense – reasonable gun regulation that we treat guns differently than we treat any other product.
So common
that harms
sense
people,
it hasn't happened.
Well, right? No, gun has not happened. We don't license gun dealers at all in this country.
Sherry's got a question though.
I'm just curious about what you're mentioning about the free speech and the First Amendment. Are you proposing that we should
limit the questions that Bruce asked about accessing your emails is a First Amendment right. Not to have your communications
be monitored
by the government.
So how far does it go once you relax that, once you change that and modify the First Amendment, how far does that go? Because I can tell you right now what's happening, and it, unfortunately I think it's coming from the Progressive Party or the Progressive Movement, that if you say anything about gays or LGBT, you can be attacked for saying that. So I'm a little concerned about what you're proposing when it comes to free speech. I thought I lived in America.
On that moment, I want to thank Sherry Griffith and Chris Varonis and Laura Fine and Dan Johnson. They are the guests this evening, and thank you for joining us.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE. The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bruce Dumont, back in Chicago, thank you very much for being with us. And we were talking about what is likely to happen. We're going to project right now. We're going to project because the presidential candidates have not responded in any significant way. They had some reaction this afternoon, but obviously this story is going to grow. I want you to look into your crystal ball. Sherry, we're going to start with you. How do you think your candidate, Donald Trump, is going to further respond this week as this story continues to play out? What do you think he's going to do and what would you like him to do?
Well, you know, I'm just one person with one opinion, and my hope is that he'll come out and say something kind and sincere, because I know from reading up on Donald that he does have that ability to be a very sincere and kind person. So that's my hope that he does.
About the incident or about
gay? No, just in general.
Okay, general.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What's Donald Trump going to say?
Or either what Donald Trump is going to say or what anybody...
What do I want him to do?
What do you want him to say?
What he's going to say is everyone should have a gun and Obama can't say Obama can't say radical Islam and he's weak and Hillary's weak. That's what he's going to say.
I think he's already said the first part of that.
He'll continue it. What I'd like him to do is just go away.
Well, he's not going away.
Just drop
the
out.
The country's not going to let him.
So I think he's going to... See this.
Oh, no, I'm going to ask you, what do you think Hillary's going to say?
Oh, I think Hillary will, you know, the sort of you said earlier, like Hillary's not showing much passion. I think they're going to have, she's going to have a lot of passion and it's going to be directed against the NRA. And I think on sort of the Muslim thing, she's going to be this message of competence and stateswoman's like, where it is absurd to be anti-Muslim like Donald is. And Donald Trump saying that we should ban Muslims is un-American and ridiculous and exactly what we don't want in the White House.
What do you think, Laura?
I think she's going to also put a different perspective on what's going on. When I was driving here today and I was listening to the radio, I heard a mother interviewed saying, I just want to know what happened to my son. Yes. And I think she's going to personify this because there are so many of us who, thank God this was not my family member, but we think of what would we do if that was us? And we cry for this mother who doesn't know what happened to her son. So I think she's going to come out and say, you know, we need to band together. We need to support these families, and we need to figure out how can we move on together.
I think the one thing I would suggest that, Donald Trump think about, it's a little bit sort of what you said, Sherry, is to show a different side of who he is. The one whether you like President Obama or not, I think, and I would say this virtually about every president we've had in the last, you know, 40 years, every president at a time of national tragedy, I think, has been able to rise to the occasion. Bill Clinton did it, Ronald Reagan did it, George Bush did it. They've been able to sort of rise to the occasion and play the comforter in chief, to embrace what had happened and put it in context and to show a compassionate and a great deal of empathy. This would be so far afield of what the image of Donald Trump is. If he could do that, I think he has the opportunity to maybe change a few opinions. And again, whether it's reaching out, you know, to the gay and lesbian community, or speaking, as I said earlier in the broadcast, we're talking about all Americans. This is an attack on all Americans. But do so with a degree of compassion and intellect. If he could do that, I think he might be able to change his impression.
Well,
I think Hillary. Because Democrats, I think, they play the politics of thing much better than Republicans.
Absolutely.
So I think they're gonna jump on and they're gonna reinforce their base.
Wait a minute. Donald Trump playing the anti-Muslim card is playing politics? Come on.
But the question is he going to play it now?
He tweeted it.
I want to go back to what you said, Bruce.
He did. He tweeted it 3 hours afterwards, saying, like, I was right. I said we got to get tough on Muslims.
Show us the tweet.
No. What he said was he was
don't give me congratulations.
Don't give me congratulations for that. That's what he said.
Yeah. It was silly. It was a silly tweet. But, Bruce, I've got a question for you.
Sure.
Do you think Donald Trump is capable of doing that? What you just said, Donald Trump the candidate.
If Donald – I don't know the answer to the question. I think if Donald Trump can do this, I think Donald Trump can erase some belief that a lot of people have that he doesn't. Right now, I would say I want to be shown whether he can do it. So far, whenever he's made a dumb statement, I've been waiting for him to surround himself with some smart people to sort of clean it up and get back on track. He has not done that in the past. You know, he's a guy, you know, on Tuesday he's going to be 70. I got a couple of years on him. So whether or not a 70-year-old guy can basically look at the situation, and also I think it gets into the depth of his heart.
Yeah.
You know, I said a while ago, the only constituency group that Donald Trump hasn't insulted so far are gays and lesbians. Now, here is a community that is in great pain tonight, but the broader issue is they are Americans. The fact that they were gay and lesbian is a secondary thing. It might have been what prompted this guy to go in there and kill them because of who they are. But first of all, they are Americans.
Well, they're human beings.
They're
too.
Human beings, and they're Americans.
Yeah.
And he's got to be able to sort of come to that conclusion intellectually and in an emotional way. Because I want to see what he would be like as commander in chief. What would he be like when America has the next great catastrophe, and if he's sitting in the White House.
No, I hate to say it. I really do. And because I've gotten past denial with Trump, and I've kind of settled into depression. And I'll just give you one example about Donald Trump. You say he's going to be 70 this Tuesday. It's true. And will this guy change? You look at his tweets this morning, and the first thing he said is, this bad thing happened. I can't remember the tweet. People died. The next tweet was this pathetic defense of himself about, I didn't attack some reporter because he's disabled. Hillary's a crook. And I'm looking at these tweets and I thought, oh my God, there's this tragedy. And he's talking about himself and doing so in such a pathetic manner. And it just reminded me, this race, it's all about him. It's not about me. It's not about conservatives. It's not about Republicans.
About everything that someone says.
I'm sorry, Sherry.
If we nitpick about everyone,
this is who he is.
No one's it's your idea of who he is, and then how you interpret what he does. Well, I take him at what I've seen experientially over the years. I've never known him to be a bigot. I've never seen anything otherwise.
We're out of time. Sherry Griffith, Chris Varonis, Laura Fine, Dan Johnson, thank you for being with us. This program is a Agenda B production. Our thanks this evening to the ever-popular Chris Zwick and Colin Bobbitt and Fritz Goldman and Dan Dorfman. Till next week, good night from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
I'm Hugh Hefner, editor-publisher of Playboy magazine, and your host. And this is Playboy's Penthouse. Come on in and meet some of our guests. Well, here we have Eleanor Bradley and Miss Joyce Nazari, two of our most popular playmates, and Lenny Bruce. Foremost exponent of sick humor and...
Oh! Isn't that sick?
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.